It's time for another episode of The Scoop. Get ready to talk Temple Athletics with John DiCarlo, Kyle Gauss, Matt Vender, and Dalton Balthaser.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 31 of The Scoop. I'm Dalton Balthaser, joined by my weekly Wednesday hashtag Temple Tufts, Matt Vender, John DiCarlo. How's it going?
It's going pretty well. I like the whole Temple Tufts thing. That's an interesting little twist off the spring game.
Can I be the GDQs then?
Yeah, you can be the GDQs. Matt and I will be the Temple Tufts.
Or wish maybe we should each be one. You be that weight room one. There's GDQ, Temple Tough.
OU.
Yeah.
One
the
of us.
Stack Days, the Standard.
The Standard, that's a big one.
Burnout on
Yeah, I can't say that
like
I know all of them.
Hashtag. Nickname overload. It's May, June, July will bring us a respite from from the nicknames and hashtags.
No. It'll still very much be in effect for the camp season and everything.
Yeah.
They're going to be pushing
there'll
probably the hashtags
be some new, there'll be some new ones in August, I guess.
Hashtag give us a break.
Sam Dalton just popping off and replying. Jeff Collins writes back, fair enough.
Right. And then he puts up like four new hashtags next to the tweet. A lot of good stuff coming up in the show. We are once again without our colleague Kyle Gauss. He continues to fade away from The Scoop, but we hope he's well and hope he's back with us real soon. But a lot of good stuff with the Cherry and White game coming up. Just initial impressions from the Cherry and White game. John Todd Senteo really stood out. A lot of other guys that were really making an impact, especially just kind of getting your first impressions of the Cherry and White game.
I mean, it was run well. I think the one thing that we say every year is I think it's just as much an event for the fans as it is for the players. You know, they work out, they go through some drills before the game. I mean, it was well attended for a rainy day. It was a pain in the butt to cover just because it's you know, we're not indoors, we're outdoors, and it's raining, and it literally gets hard to write stuff down on a notepad. But you know, it was well, like I said, it was well attended. It was they had bleachers along the east. Will that be the east sideline? Good crowd before the game, good crowd during the game. Yeah, they announced at halftime they were giving Chris Myrick a walk-on tight end a scholarship. I think we talked about him a little bit last week. Ed Foley pointed out that he's been a contributor at tight end. I know everybody wants to know about the quarterbacks. I think just about everybody helped themselves on Saturday with the exception of Logan Marsh. Yeah, I don't think Logan looked great through one sidearm pick. He talked about that. He's like, I have to stop, you know, essentially said I have to stop that sidearm throw. Thought Anthony Russo made a couple nice throws. He put one on Jagger Gardner's back shoulder. Thought Frank Neutile, I mean, he had a touchdown run. He had the touchdown pass to Freddie Johnson over the middle, put it right there in stride. I think he sometimes gets forgotten in this competition. And then I thought Todd Senteo looked pretty good. You know, you got to remember he would normally still be in high school at this point. I will tell you that someone I talked to on Saturday who's around the program and knows what he's talking about says that there's a different feel when he gets into the huddle. And as cliche as it sounds, I think the coaches are seeing a little bit more of that it factor in him. And I think it's going to be really interesting. I know Jeff Collins kind of dances around the topic because I really do think these guys are being honest when they say we don't know yet. I think conventional wisdom sometimes suggests that it might be Logan because he has a tad more experience and he was, for whatever it's worth, was P.J. Walker's backup this season when he would get into games late. I think the first 5, 6, 7 weeks of the season are going to tell us a lot. I think if the coaches had their druthers, they would like to redshirt Todd Senteo, but I just wonder if he keeps progressing, if he's just going to give them something to think about. I'm not saying Anthony Russo is out of the mix. I'm just telling you that when you talk to certain people who kind of know what's going on, like they'll say they talk. There's a different tone when they talk about him. Now I'll say that Russo made some what looked like some good reads and some quick reads. He had the big recruiting pedigree coming out of high school. But again, even to me, my prediction of what I think will happen is I think it's either going to be Logan or Frank who starts the year because I just don't think they're going to want to put a brand new quarterback out to pasture at Notre Dame. I realize Notre Dame is not going to be a top five, top 10 team, but you're still walking into one of the biggest atmospheres in college football. And I think you know Kyle talked about this before and saying that Joe Paterno didn't like ruining guys early, but I'm not so sure that the guy who starts the season will be the guy that finishes the season, so we'll see. But I think you saw flashes from three of the four guys. I think Marchie could have played a better game. I think Jagger Gardner ran the ball really well. I mean, there was one run where he just jumped right over Sean Chandler. He ran the ball very decisively. I thought he looked pretty good. But he had a lot of guys out. Like Leon Johnson was out. Jacob Martin was out. So it's more an event than anything else. But you see some flashes here and there. But, you know, Keith Kirkwood lined up at defensive end and got in there and actually got a sack. And so I think that when these guys talk about position flexibility and giving guys a global look at the offense, a global look at the defense, I think they're serious about it. But there's still so much to be determined. The coaches don't say much because they're new. And if I were them, if I were Jeff Collins, if I were Dave Patnaud, if I were Tavor Johnson, I wouldn't probably say too much decisive stuff, because you don't want to come in, barely know these guys, and put someone in a box and be like, boy, Sean Bradley reminds me of Ray Lewis, or boy, Lynn McCrump reminds me of Tees Tabor. I think he's just as good. I'm kind of, for their benefit, I'm glad they're not saying stuff like that. For us as journalists and as sports writers, you're still kind of left guessing. But to me, it seems like they're still kind of cautious. I'm sure that they have a lot of tape to review from Saturday and the last couple weeks of the spring. And so we'll see. But, you know, the guys that I think have helped themselves the most are, you know, Gardner, Sean Bradley, some of the names we've been talking about. But I think Todd Senteo is an intriguing name in that quarterback mix. And again, Jack Gardner helps himself. We have a mailbag question about this later. Who's going to, you know, is anybody really emerging behind Rockwell Armstead, Tylee Grainer maybe? But Gardner, I thought, ran the ball pretty well.
Matt, I want to ask you about this. John talked about the position flexibility. For me, I just find it odd, a little confusing. I understand the idea of it, but, you know, in my opinion, I don't think you should have one of your Temple tough single-digit guys on the other side, especially, you know, a fluke injury or anything like that. That kind of stands out to me. What are your thoughts on the whole idea of position flexibility, and do you think it's something that guys like Keith Kirkwood should do? I understand last year it was Ramon Deloach that really hadn't made an impact in that way, but he didn't have a lot of offensive snaps, where Keith Kirkwood's one of the better receivers on the team.
I think it's a legitimate thing that the coaches stress a lot when they talk to reporters. That's one thing that Jeff Collins really likes to stress. I mean, I don't think there's been a time where he's talked to us where he hasn't mentioned position flexibility at least once. And I think it's legitimate to think that Keith Kirkwood might be an effective defensive end. I mean, you look at what Ramon Deloach did last year. He was playing some tight end and played tight end very well last year as a receiver. But when they moved him over to defensive end, he was a really, really an effective pass rusher. I think he had four sacks last year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when it was just kind of a situational thing with him, and they didn't play him a ton of snaps on defense, they didn't practice him a ton on defense, but when they put him in there, he was effective. And you look at Keith Kirkwood's body type and just his length. He played basketball in high school. I think, you know, he kind of has that body type where he could be an effective pass rusher. You saw it, he got a sack in the spring game on Saturday. So, you know, I think if you see a guy can be an effective pass rusher, if you see he can help you on both sides of the ball, you're going to want to take advantage of that from a team's perspective. And then if you look at it from the player's point of view, I think the player can kind of look at it like, hey, if I get film of me playing receiver and then I get film of me playing defensive end or defensive back, I'm, you know, more likely to go to the NFL because, well, they can see that I can play both positions, and maybe, you know, Kirkwood, maybe he ends up being an effective defensive end, and maybe an NFL team likes him there, and it opens up an opportunity. So I think it's good for both sides. I do understand the little bit of concern where, you know, Kirkwood could go in at defensive end, play a few snaps, and, you know, break his ankle or something. You don't know for sure. Freak things do happen like that. But I think overall, it's a good thing, and I think it's a good recruiting pitch too. I think, you know, a lot of kids in high school they play both sides, and I think a lot of kids would like to do that at the college level. They want to be on the field as much as possible. They like playing. So yeah, I think it's a good thing to bring to the table. I really do.
Getting back to the quarterbacks, John, do you think your opinion changed on who might come out of this quarterback competition with the job? Did anything change for you on Saturday when you saw those guys in game action instead of just seeing, you know, last 15, 20 minutes of practice?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think there's been a tendency, I know on my part, to kind of, and again, like, this is just, you know, this is supposition. We don't know. And I really truly do believe that. I don't think the coaches have a super firm grasp on it. I mean, you know, Jeff Collins was asked about on Saturday who would start tomorrow. He said if it was Notre Dame game was next week, I really don't know. I do believe him. I think at least on my end, maybe there's been a kind of a tendency. I'm not saying this just because we ran a story on him, you know, yesterday, but I'm not so sure that Frank Neutau's out of the mix just yet. Again, if their plan is we want to start the season We know we have one of the better running backs in the conference and maybe the country in Rockwell Armstead. We need a guy that can just manage the offense, not make mistakes. Let's see what we can do here. I mean, can we say convincingly that, like, Logan Marchie is definitely that guy? I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it is Frank. I mean, Logan is he can move out of the pocket a little bit. He can improvise a little bit, but it's not like he has shown so much where you're thinking, like, he's definitely the guy. I think people have a tendency to kind of pigeonhole Frank because, again, he's, for the most part, he's a pocket passer. Now, Jeff keeps calling him Frankie Juice, which is funny because, again, we're not around him. But when he's interviewed, he's super reserved. Mm-hmm. You know, so, but, you know, he rolled out. He had a touchdown run on a design run. The pass that he threw to Freddie Johnson, again, it's one throw in a spring game, but he looked like he was throwing the ball decisively like he did two seasons ago when he had a late game touchdown pass against Tulane. So, yeah, I saw a couple of things that changed my mind. I'm not convinced that he's completely out of the mix. Again, if their plan is we need to start the year with a veteran guy and just see where it goes, I'm not convinced that Frank is out of the mix there. And again, like I said, Todd Senteo showed me a little bit. He kind of looks like, again, this is very, 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 very preliminary. And I hope that there were a lot of people who were critical of P.J. Walker, Phil Walker over the years. I think when you look at a wide-open quarterback competition, you can really appreciate the fact that Walker held down this job for the better part of 4 years. Yes, he had his moments. Yes, he had his moments where he didn't make great decisions, but he was still a very, very good college quarterback. So now you're looking at a group of four guys where there is no discernible, like, that's the guy right now. So I think it allows you to appreciate what you've had. When I look at Senteo, I see a guy with a little bit of playmaking ability, a guy who kind of, you know, he looks similar to PJ in that he's 6 feet. I don't know that he has PJ's arm strength, but he looks like he's a little better on his feet. Looks like he can put a little bit better touch on the ball. I thought he looked good Saturday. And again, like I said, a few people have mentioned him to me and said, yeah, there's a bit of a different feel when he goes in there. And that's a lot to say for a guy who's a whatever you want to call him, like a mid-year enrollee, a guy who, again, would normally be graduating high school next month or in June. So to me, I think Saturday reaffirmed that this truly is an open competition. But at some point, again, Jeff Collins just won't talk about it. I tried asking him, I said, but what's your plan going into August? Because at some point, I said, there are only going to be so many reps to go around. And Jeff's response was, well, if you've seen us practice, you see that a lot of guys get multiple reps. I get that. What I meant was, at some point, 2 weeks out from Notre Dame, you're grooming a starter, you know, unless they really truly want to be a two quarterback team. So I would say that quarterback position battle coming out of Saturday, I thought it's not any clearer to me, but I think there was some new information that I thought Senteo played well and Newtile played better than I thought he would.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the spring game was a little bit representative of how the whole spring practice has gone with the quarterbacks, at least. Mm-hmm. You know, again, we see very limited parts of these spring practices. We get to see about the last 20 minutes, mm-hmm. as we've said many times before. But, you know, Logan Marchie did not obviously look good on Saturday. But I don't know, from what we've seen of him, I haven't seen him make a ton of plays in the open portions of practice that we've seen. Mm-hmm. You know, through the spring, we just haven't seen him make a ton of plays. We have seen him in there a lot with the first teamers. But, you know, whenever Todd Senteo gets in the game, and whenever he comes in practice, it just seems like, I agree with John in that you see him make plays pretty consistently. I mean, whether it's with his legs or with his arm, I mean, he makes a lot of plays. He does seem to have maybe a little bit more speed than PJ, and I would agree that, you know, he probably puts a little bit better touch on it at times, but I don't think he has the arm strength of PJ, at least not yet. But, you know, I've been really impressed with Todd Senteo over the spring. I didn't expect him to come in and as a guy that's supposed to be finishing out his high school senior year. He's at Temple, a kid from Florida comes up to Temple as an 18-year-old and comes up and plays really, really well this spring. I didn't see it coming as much as I didn't see this happening, but, you know, he's really impressed me. And I thought, you know, I think Anthony Russo, from the time we've seen him, has looked fairly pretty good this spring. I mean, and he had a fairly decent spring game as well, so I think, you know, I think the quarterbacks as well, if you look at the quarterbacks as a whole, just three of the four of them looked pretty good in the spring game. So I think you have to come out of the spring game feeling okay about the quarterback position. I don't think there's a guy that obviously stands out and is the starter right now. You know, I don't think that'll be decided until in August. But, you know, I think you saw some good things from at least three of the quarterbacks on the roster.
Yeah, I think a real quick note about Russo, the throw he made to Gardner was good. put it right there on his shoulder. I still don't know. Again, I think the average fan would have thought, like, based on his recruiting pedigree, P.J. Walker leaves and graduates, Anthony Russo is the next guy. I can't definitively say to you that, like, he's the next guy I'm waiting. I don't think there's anybody in the program right now who is that sold on him. But it doesn't mean that they couldn't be at some point. The one thing he did, not just the one thing, but he did look fairly decisive on Saturday. He got the ball out quick. He made some quick reads, which can be a good sign, you know, as long as he's not being super careless with the ball. It's not like he's sitting there tapping the ball, and then waiting. So that's a good sign. So to me, I just think there's a healthy amount of intrigue heading into August, because I really do think it's again, it will continue to be the big storyline, but I think there's a really healthy amount of intrigue with Senteo, I will say. I just think the one thing that coaches are going to be hesitant about is, like, do we really just want to put him out? A kid who, you know, didn't have the benefit of redshirt year, came in as a mid-year enrollee. Again, this happens. It's not like it would be a super rare thing, but is he really our guy against Notre Dame? So I think August is going to be really interesting, again, because Collins doesn't tell you much. At some point, they have to start grooming quarterback, but they don't give you much. It's like they're either above the line or below the line. It's, you know, Frankie Juice did this, you know, it's a global approach to this. So they have their new catchphrases and buzzwords and stuff like that. But I think Senteo and Frank Neutile, and even to a certain extent Russo, made things interesting on Saturday. I don't think they really did anything to hurt themselves, I would say.
And talking about the quarterbacks, John, you had a chance to talk with P.J. Walker at the Cherry and White game on Saturday, and he kind of talked about what he thought of these four quarterbacks. So here's that audio of John talking to P.J. Walker about the four quarterbacks and some things that he saw and what he was seeing from those guys.
Logan and Frank, you know, they was behind me for a couple of years, and I felt like we've had a great time here, you know, being at Temple, and I felt like they've learned a lot from me, you know. I've learned a lot from them, you know, just being around them guys to help me better my game and everything also. So, but you know, I got the chance to work with Russo for a year. You know, he was on board with us. And, you know, everything that we did was competition, and we learned from each other. You know, we always asked each other questions. We always helped each other out. And, you know, this is my first time being around Toddy, you know, but I think he got a lot of his upside is going to be unbelievable. I think he got a lot of potential to be great.
So you can hear there, and PJ's not just the only guy, but, you know, he's quick to point out that he's been working. You know, he knows Frank. He knows Logan. Had a chance to spend a year with Russo. Then he gets to talking about Senteo. And he talks about, I think, like he says there, like, his upside. So I think people, and again, my source on this is not just PJ. It's quite a few people. His voice kind of picked up and said, this was my first real time around Toddy, and I'll tell you what. Like, people are kind of left with that. Like, ooh, okay. Was it? Because you think about it, he was recruited by the previous staff, and then they went after the kid who, I don't know if his name currently escapes me, the dual threat guy.
David Pindell,
who ended up at UConn, right? Mm-hmm. So I thought, like, and Pat Nude will say, like, hey, I recruited Todd when I was at Coastal. But I thought, like, do they really like this kid? Did they take him for depth? But I just get the impression that he's really giving people something to think about. And as you could hear there, Walker was fairly impressed with him too. Yeah, so staying with the North Jersey Temple tie theme, you guys know a lot of the former players come back. Muhammad Wilkerson was there. I thought I saw Muhammad. I didn't get a chance to talk to him, but I got a chance to catch up with Steve Maneri. I always enjoy talking to him. He's got just a great way of seeing the game and approaching the game. And wanted to talk to him about a number of different things. We have that interview is up on the site right now. Steve played, for the most part, five seasons in the NFL. He's got a cool story. He was part of that first recruiting class in 2006, where Al Golden used to say, like, we were lucky. We felt lucky if we could beat out UMass, Villanova, programs like that. We had not much to sell other than just potential and hope. Steve was part of that first class with Andre Neblett and some guys that really built things. And he actually was part of that 09 bowl team that went to the Eagle Bank Bowl. That was a huge deal at the time for Temple to go to a bowl game. He caught a touchdown pass in that game. So I had a chance to talk to Steve about a number of different things. He's doing some great charity work with an organization called Kids Dream Big. One of the guys that's helping him out is former Temple center, John Palumbo. And so I had a chance to talk to Steve. He didn't really get into them by name, but what you're going to hear here is Steve talking about what those tight ends are going through right now, because again, we've talked about the essentially brand new group of tight ends, where you've got Kenny Yeboah, Steve Petrick, Chris Myrick, who else am I forgetting?
Patrick Anderson.
Patrick Anderson, maybe. I don't know what you want to call Brandon Mack, maybe just a bigger wide receiver, but a lot of guys vying for time there. So I asked Steve, first part of this clip, you're going to hear Steve talking about when he's answering my question. I said, what are these guys going through right now? What do they need to do? So Steve talks about the grind of spring ball, and then Steve also talked, part of that interview, he talked about just his view of how far the Temple program has come. So here's an excerpt from that interview with Steve Mannieri, and again, you can listen to the whole thing on the website right now.
What's unique about the spring is there's no, what we like to call, light at the end of the tunnel. You're in training camp, the light is the end of the training camp when you training camp breaks and you're playing football. Each week, you work your butt off on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and the game's on Saturday. Saturday's the light, the fun. In the spring, it's just you're hitting like crazy, you're working your butt off, and you're just going to practice again the next day. So the important thing is you're not looking forward to the light at the end of the tunnel. You're looking forward at one thing, getting better. One thing I did, I made it a point. I wasn't the most gifted athletic person on our team, but I made it a point every offseason is to improve on something, get better. So these guys, I'm sure the coaches are giving them goals and giving them things to do to get better at. And if you can get better at two or three things, and this is live, this is the best practice you're going to get. No amount of weight room time, no amount of running routes on air is going to help improve yourself as much as playing football is and actually hitting people and making a full speed contact. And I think that's, these guys are all focused on getting better, and I know they got a great coaching staff behind them that are doing that for them.
I mean, what's your view of just the program where it is right now, being able to win a conference championship last year? Jeff Collins is here now. They have a lot of key players to replace, but just the fact that they've been able to sustain the level of success, and you guys really kind of set the table, came in, you were part of that big first recruiting class, you guys got to that 09 bowl game. What's your view of just how where the program is right now?
I think we're in a great space. I mean, when we got here, as you, most of your listeners know, that we're a losing program for a lot of years in a row. I think having success over how many different coaches now? Four different. This will be the fourth coach, I think, since I've left here. And the problem is, it's just guys, they don't stay. There's so much opportunity other places that coaches leave, and you know they do well, and because they do well, they leave and they get a promotion, they get more money, whatever it is. I'm just hoping that we can keep the success going, and I hope Coach Collins, I think he's great from what I've seen of him so far, and I hope we keep winning and he stays as long as possible, because that's really what we need. We need someone that's going to be a Temple lifer, and if not lifer, but someone who's going to be here for the long haul. And I hope he stays, I hope all the coaches stay, and I hope we have a sustained success and maybe even win a championship down the road. And I'm not talking about a conference championship, but one of the big ones.
So there's John talking with Steve Mannieri, former Temple tight end. And as we transition to, it's NFL draft week here in Philadelphia. The draft will be taking place here in Philadelphia. We have two Temple athletes that could be drafted in the first round, possibly early second round as well. You have Hassan Reddick, the former defensive end here at Temple, and linebacker and Deion Dawkins, the former left tackle. A lot of buzz of Hassan Reddick. Matt said before the show that Daniel Jeremiah of NFL Network was saying that he was one of the hot buzz names out there with Christian McCaffrey as well. I'm just curious to see what you guys think of where Hassan could end up, and even Deion as well. I've seen some reports that say Deion could go before Hassan. I've seen reports that Hassan could go in that top 10. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there. What do you guys think of where these guys could end up?
Well, I mean, I think first off, I'll start with Hassan because I think he will go before Deion. Yeah. But I look at Hassan, I think at Pro Day when a couple Bengals scouts came out to Philly to watch Hassan and work with Hassan one-on-one, they had Jim Haslett, the linebackers coach there, for the Bengals. So I think the Bengals are the destination spot that I've kind of been looking at for Hassan. That's probably the height of where he could go. I think at 9 is probably that first slot he could go. Although he did visit, I think he did visit the Jaguars, who pick at 4. I don't know how serious.
Ian Rappaport reported that, but then I think there were some comments, and again, who knows? I mean, this is the fun part of the pre-draft process where all sorts of stuff is floating around. Now, so the speculation there was maybe that the Jaguars were talking to him just in case they decided to trade down. Mm-hmm. I mean, hey, good for Hassan. Do I see him? Do I think he's the fourth best player in the draft? No. I mean, if he got drafted fourth, that'd be incredible for him. More power to him. But it was interesting that he visited the Jags. Mm-hmm. Also interesting. So if he goes to the Bengals at 9, and you said the Bengals spent a lot of time with him at Pro Day. Jim Haslett was talking to him. John Renstra, unless I'm missing something, was the highest drafted Temple player, right?
Yeah.
So he would tie, if the Bengals take him ninth, he would tie John Renster, who was a really good offensive lineman in the NFL for, I think, 8 or 9 seasons, played with the Steelers. And it would be cool to see him tie that mark. Even cooler for the program if they did have 2 first-round picks. I think it's obviously going to be dependent on, like, how many, if Trubisky goes and then Deshaun Watson goes. If there's a run on quarterbacks that pushes talent back, that'll be interesting. I don't know. It'd be really interesting. If Deion sneaks into the first round, then that's the first time in Temple history that they've had 2 first-round picks, which is really, really significant for them. I agree with you. I'd be utterly shocked if Deion goes before Hassan. That's not a shot at Deion Dawkins. I just think that that Hassan goes before him, mm-hmm. I would say.
Yeah, and I mean, with Deion, his destination spot, I mean, I think if I had to bet on it, I still think he goes early, very early second round. I think he does have to wait until Friday to hear his name called. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, there has been some buzz. I don't know how reliable it is, but there's buzz saying, you know, he could go to Indianapolis at 15, I think, as high as there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you look at the draft right now and the depth that there is at offensive line, there isn't much as far as offensive linemen in this draft. So, mm-hmm. I keep thinking it would really only take one or two teams to reach for an offensive lineman for Deion to slide into the first round. It's a good year for him to be, you know, an offensive lineman because it's not too deep as far as offensive linemen go.
Yeah, and the other interesting thing is, too, the theme over the past couple of days has been, like, so many people, local people, national people, talking about all the character issues and guys getting bounced around. So Gary and Conley all of a sudden may not get drafted at all. Mm-hmm. You know, if NFL teams are not going to have a whole lot of time to look into his situation with these rape allegations, it's very similar to, like, all of a sudden, boom, that Lyle Collins stuff mm-hmm. drops late. You know, if it's obviously a situation where if the allegations are true, he hasn't been charged yet, but if the allegations are true, then yeah, then he deserves to be prosecuted. Then if the allegations aren't true, then the false accuser and this the potential false accuser needs to be, you know, prosecuted as well. But what a obviously awful timing for him. So if he drops out of the first round, if Reuben Foster gets pushed back again, like, people are, all I'm going on is, you know, stuff you hear, you know, mm-hmm. stuff you read on Twitter, like the various reports that you read. I mean, Reuben Foster's had a rough upbringing, hell of a football player. If the character concerns, you know, with him, like, I guess, what, mouthing off that nurse at the combine.
Yeah, he also had a diluted sample.
And there are people saying, like, there could be another shoe to drop with him. I have no idea. I didn't cover Alabama. I'd be lying if I said I was, you know, following this guy throughout the pre-draft process. But let's say, for argument's sake, that he falls into the second round or late in the first round and Conley's gone. There are two guys who typically go ahead of Deion Dawkins, so do those guys getting pushed, potentially pushed out of the first round, open something up for Deion? Maybe. I don't know. They open up stuff for a lot of people, but just the character concerns, like, heading into the draft are really interesting. Then it's going to be a litmus test for these teams, like, how much are you going to put up with? How much of your homework did you do? Deion and Hassan are linked in the sense that they were involved in that off-campus fight. That's, like, the one thing that teams will look into. I don't think it's going to deter teams at all from drafting them. Otherwise, they have pretty squeaky clean reputations. They're nice guys. They've worked hard. They've been good players. But again, if guys like Conley and Foster get pushed to the second round, then I don't know. Maybe Deion does sneak into the first round.
I think you go back to Conley. It's like it's not like a double-edged sword, but it's like some reports are like he wasn't even in that locale, and then other reports say the same thing. So it's just the whole, like, buzzword type thing. But getting back to Deion, I think your point about the Colts is interesting. Andrew Luck has been getting beat for years.
Sure.
They have no offensive line whatsoever. I think another interesting spot would be the Chargers. I think the Chargers is an interesting spot. I think that's where Mel Kiper had him in his most recent draft. You have King Dunlap on one side, big guy, and then you have, you know, Deion Dawkins on the other side. So I think that would be a good match as well. But I think you look, even the Eagles, like Conley and Foster, like the Eagles, like prime targets. I've been talking with Eagles fans all week, and they're like, those would be two guys that we'd love to have. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be interesting to see where, you know, Deion moves his way in and out. He's definitely a very valuable starter in the early second round that you can grab.
Remember King Dunlap started his career?
Eagles.
Yeah.
That's
good. He finds a stride with the Chargers.
But with Conley, I mean, we've seen it before where, like, what with Lyle Collins, I mean, he didn't get drafted just because he had his name around a potential, like, it was a murder, but still his name was just involved, not even, you know, obviously, you know, he was totally innocent, but you just can see what happens when guys have their name around bad things right around the draft, and, you know, they can either fall or just not get drafted. So with Conley, I don't think a team is going to even touch him unless his name is totally cleared by tomorrow. So we'll have to see. But that's a really, really interesting story.
Mm-hmm. So quickly, do you guys think, like, obviously this is a huge week for Temple football because you have two guys that could potentially be first-round picks. How does that speak to, like, the evolution of the program? It's kind of, the timing is kind of impeccable, too. You have two guys from Temple that could get drafted in the first round in the drafts in Philly.
I mean, it's huge. I mean, again, like, all these guys are coming up in high school. Every high school football player thinks that he can play at the NFL, and any college coach worth his weight recognizes that and says, hey, I can help you get you there. I'm always going to be honest with you, not everybody gets to the NFL, but we want to be a developmental program that can get guys to the pros. So if you have two guys that go in the first round, if that happens, that's huge. You'd have to go back to the class that had, was, did Bernard, Tahir Whitehead, that was all the same draft class, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, this is the most loaded class they've had in a while. I mean, you still hear Nate Harrison's name come up, didn't have a ton of interceptions, wasn't like a 3-year starter, a cornerback, but we've talked about his versatility. Did PJ help himself out? He seemed fairly upbeat about the three most recent workouts he had. In the story that we have up on the site from earlier this week, you know, he said that some of the feedback he gets is it's generally positive. Some people tell him if you were 2 inches taller, you'd be like a first, you know, maybe like a second or, you know, first 2-day pick, I think is what he said. But, I mean, if you have four guys going in this draft, two end up going in the first round, and let's say Harrison goes in the sixth round and PJ goes in the seventh, that's a great day for you to really, again, you're telling people, we just won a conference championship, we send guys to the pros. That's literally all they can do right now until they get to a Power 5 conference, if it gets to that point. Or, you know, the only other next step for them as far as they could go would be like to do what Houston did a couple years ago, you know, win the conference title, beat the crap out of a P5 school like Florida State, like Houston did. But yeah, it says a lot about the evolution of the program and the fact that they can get guys to the NFL. But again, they were for the most part developmental guys. We all know Hassan's story. He was a walk-on. Nobody outside of maybe Paul Palmer and Fran Brown knew he had a chance to be good. You know, Dion had the Cincinnati offer, so he wasn't a complete unknown. Nate Harrison was, we liked him at camp. Yeah. This kid from the Maryland area, let's take him. We haven't talked about Jihad. I haven't heard a ton of buzz about Jihad getting drafted, but it'll probably end up in somebody's camp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or it could get drafted. Who knows? But there is a lot. It's a deep running back draft. But yeah, it says a lot about the evolution of the program.
It's time for our sometimes serious and sometimes silly mailbag. We appreciate the questions on Twitter and the message boards. First question comes from Earl Chaney on Twitter. Does Todd Senteo have a legit chance to be the opening day starter?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we've been talking about. Does he have a legit chance? Sure. Again, I think the one thing that might grab at the conscience of Jeff Collins and Dave Patnode is, do we want to throw him out there right now? Again, now, when things get live and things get hot and humid with pads on more often in August, maybe Todd Senteo wilts a little bit. I don't, not that I'm rooting for that to happen or anything, but got a legitimate shot. Again, it's kind of too close or too hard to call at this point. But, you know, if we were doing this show 2 days before the start of spring ball and we got this question, I'd be like, no way in hell. They're going to redshirt him. He's got some potential, but we haven't seen him live yet at this level. Now having seen him, hearing people talk about him, again, just you hear the inflection in people's voice, yeah, I think he's got a shot.
Next question comes from Getsky on Twitter. Best dressed for the NFL draft predictions. Who out of the guys would be in consideration for the best dressed NFL prospect?
I think Myles Garrett. I mean, if you're going to be the number one pick, I feel like, and we were talking about this before we started recording, Myles Garrett just did that piece with Von Miller. I think it was on ESPN where they're back on campus, and seems like he's got like he's a pretty colorful guy, got a good sense of humor, pretty sharp, pretty witty. I'd be shocked if, like, you know, unless there's some sort of unforeseen circumstance, he's gonna be the top pick. I feel like he's gonna, if you know you're pretty much gonna be the top pick, I'd be surprised if he wasn't dressed really well.
But it's the Browns. The Browns will do crazy things.
Yeah, you know what the Browns have? They have money. Yeah. Like every other team. I'm sure he'll be excited.
I will say Myles Garrett, I think he's gonna come out a pretty cool outfit, but I mean, I have high expectations for Hassan. I think he'll come up with something cool. Wouldn't surprise me if he comes out like something like a cherry colored sport coat. I almost am expecting that or something like that, but I do expect Hassan to come out with something cool. I think Leonard Fournette could come out with something cool. And I also definitely have high expectations for Deshaun Watson, whenever he's picked. I don't know when that will be. Mm-hmm.
That's who I was going to say. I was going to say Deshaun Watson. Yeah.
Deshaun Watson might be the runner-up to Myles Garrett.
Yeah.
Next question comes from Philly Bully on Twitter. Anyone high on Temple for the 2018 class? We made a lot of offers this past week. Also, does Hassan Reddick last past the 15th pick?
I mean, if we were to do the second part first, I don't know that that's the Colter pick in 15th, right?
Yeah.
I don't think he gets past 15.
I don't think so. I don't think he gets past 15.
I'd be very surprised. I think we'd all be very surprised if he goes past 15.
In terms of the 2018 kids, I mean, I'm thinking of the tweet from
Justin Johnson.
Again, this stuff's a crapshoot, you know, but he Johnson had a tweet, was it right before, right after the spring game, that kind of made him sound like a Temple lean.
Well,
right?
He put out a tweet saying, like, he put it on his Twitter handle, like, Big Fresh, whatever, I think it's Big Fresh, I think it's his Twitter handle, that he like, pointed an arrow towards it, said Big Fresh _TU. And with a Temple at it. And then he also said, I think it was on April 20th, that he's going to make his commitment soon.
Mm-hmm.
I think he cut his list down to about 8 schools a few months ago. So, you know, I do. Again, these recruits can like to play into some games and stuff like that. But I mean, right now it does seem like he's highly interested and could be one of the next dominoes to fall. He was also at the spring game on Saturday.
Next question comes from Joseph Williams on Twitter. I've been hearing good things about Tyleek Rayner. Realistically, how much action will he see with the backfield being pretty crowded with guys like Raquel Armstead, Jagger Gardner, among others?
Other Imhotep kid. But yeah, I mean, I think we've seen him over the past couple weeks. I think he has looked good. He's shown a burst that I hadn't really seen out of him. And he's kind of just flashed a little bit. When we talked to Ed Foley, I think it was about a week ago, he mentioned Tyleek Rayner as a guy that's impressed him. I believe Rayner did miss the first couple weeks of spring practice. He was hurt, but I think since the time he's come back, he has looked good. He's looked like he's had that burst.
Mm-hmm.
And he was coming off a pretty serious injury in high school that forced him to have to redshirt last year. So I think he looks like he has that burst and that added dimension that they kind of need out of this running back group, because Raquel Armstead, as good as he is, and he's probably going to end up being one of the best running backs of the conference, he's not the breakaway type of speed maybe that you need a change of pace guy, and I think Tyleek Rayner could be that guy. I don't think Jagger Gardner's the breakaway guy that Rayner is. So I think he adds another dimension to the running back group. I don't think he'll get 20 carries a game, but I think, you know, he could be a guy that you splice in behind Gardner, behind Armstead, and be really productive.
Although Jagger and Raquel did have, like, Jagger had the run, what, 2 years ago at SMU?
Oh, yeah, don't get me wrong, they're fast. Yeah. But, I mean, Rayner's probably, like, a 4-4 guy. He's very, very fast.
He was very good. I mean, very good at Imhotep. And was what? Didn't he originally commit to Arizona?
Yeah, he was committed to Arizona. He was a pretty big recruit at one point.
Yeah, and then got hurt, and then was kind of like a sort of a surprise commit here, right? Not that they hadn't recruited him,
it was almost like when he committed, I think I think they were just surprised to get the phone call where he was called up and said he's committing. I think there was a little bit of surprise when he came to commit after he decommitted from Arizona. I think they were a little bit surprised, because I don't think they had been recruiting him extremely hard at that point in time.
Real quick question before we move on to, and I realize I'm interrupting the mailbag with my own question, but staying on the recruiting theme here for a second, Matt, you've done this for a while. So they get the verbal from Elijah Clark over the weekend. How much, when recruits see at least one guy committed, does that start a chain reaction of things? Does it start, like, if Elijah Clark commits, does that maybe a couple of these guys? We should note, they had a lot of guys there on Saturday, a lot of guys on campus. Kyle Dobbins from St. Augustine Prep was there. Kevin Doyle, quarterback, although I think he's kind of like a heavy pit lean at this point. Stanley and Trevon King from Woodrow Wilson. Javonte Jean-Baptiste from Bergen Catholic. Jalen Brown from DeMatha was there. So there were some good players there. So if Clark commits, does that cause any momentum on their end to say, hey, we got to commit out of this weekend? Could we see a few more when they said one kid commits and say, okay, somebody committed to Temple, now they're getting the momentum going? You think that's how it works sometimes, or does that not have as much of an effect in terms of what we could see in this 2018 class? Are we still looking at more like June and camp?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe could a couple more commits trickle in between now and the end of May when the first camp is. I think, yeah, there could be one or two more commits that trickle in, but I don't think it's going to start this huge wave of commitments or anything like that. I still think that under Jeff Collins, I think they're going to rely heavily on camps. I think once camp season starts at the end of May, Memorial Day weekend, I think, you know, they'll be sending out a lot of offers and probably land some commits on the first day. So, you know, that's typically how it goes. But, you know, I definitely think it's a good way to get the class started. You don't want to go into camp season with no commits. That's for sure. You want to have a little bit of a base, because some kids might be hesitant if they are going to be the first commit. So it's good to get it out of the way, I think. But yeah, I don't think it's going to set off any huge wave of commitments between now and camp season.
Next question comes from Joey Craney on Twitter. Check out Billboard's list of top 100 choruses. Give us your revised top five.
Joey with another scratching our brain where it itches music question. So
I'm going to get this out front. I looked at every one of those songs. I recognized maybe about 30.
That's not bad.
It's not bad, but not a lot of them I would ever listen to.
I say this with the disclaimer of saying, like, I'm not trying to be the grouchy old man here. I get the fact that a lot of these choruses are catchy, so maybe I'm not looking at it through the right lens. I can't stand Call Me Maybe. I know it was catchy. I know, like, the fact that that's number one, I get it, because it was such a viral song. If you're going straight up, like, choruses, I keep Kelly Clarkson Since You've Been Gone in the top five. I have seen grown men dance and jump up and down at weddings dancing to this, and guys love to just, like, I'm gonna be honest with you, bro. Like, I know it's a pop song, but I kind of like it. You know, I've seen a lot of people let their guard down about.
I want to know who you're imitating with that. It sounds
like one of my friends, The Killers. I never got super into The Killers like some of my friends, but I'll keep Mr. Brightside in the top five just because, again, it was. You know what? I'm gonna keep Outkast, Miss Jackson in there, and bounce The Killers.
Yeah, Miss Jackson needs to be in there.
Yeah, Jimmy Eat World, Can't Stand. My brother. In the middle.
Empire State of Mind was one that
I think I was definitely in the top 10.
That would be my top one if I had to pick one.
I'm just scrolling through this, Joey. Pardon me for not...
Ride With Me. I like that one. I don't know if that's John's taste, but
I like that. I mean, it reminds me of, like, covering... A lot of high school basketball teams came out to that song, I think. So Ride With Me was like, let's see. I can't remember. I want to say it. Bless you. It was like 98 to 2001.
This list is giving Matt allergies.
Yeah.
My allergies have been terrible.
I think everybody's like that. I don't know. I'm trying to think. I'm scrolling through the list here to see if there's something later on the list here that could be bounced. I'm a little surprised to see that Britney Spears' Oops, I Did It Again at 19 is farther down the list. Fountains of Wayne, Stacey's Mom, that's a good song. Made for jokes amongst friends. Everybody would just insert someone else's mom's name in there just to tweak people. Oh, gosh, I'm just scrolling through this. I won't go through the whole thing. MIA, Paper Planes, great song. So, Dalton, what were the songs that you did know?
Maroon 5's This Love is like 90.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That's kind of low for that.
Yeah, I enjoyed that one.
Snoop Dogg and Pharrell, Drop It Like It's Hot, 35. I think that's way too low for that song. I think that should be up there. Is it top five? I don't know. Oh boy. Fall Out Boy, Can't Stand Them. I don't know.
It seems like a lot of the songs are like one hit type songs that you know, that's it. That's really it. A lot of the bands that you see in there, like Carly Rae Jepsen, that Call Me Maybe, that, you know, what else has she done since then? You know what I mean?
Well, I don't know. Actually, a lot of these aren't one-hit wonders. Justin Bieber, Can't Stand Him. Appreciate the fact that he sold a lot of records, but literally cannot stand the guy. Kyle's wife, Meg Gauss, loves Justin Bieber. She'll probably hate hearing that. Kings of Leon, Sex on Fire, 63. Way too low for that. Oh, I don't know. Sheryl Crow, Soak Up the Sun. Interesting. I don't know. That's about all I got. I'm sure I'm gonna have to look over this list a little bit more. Maybe we'll do like a part two. Oh, Shut Up and Dance, Walk the Moon. Oh, gets played at weddings a lot. First of all, the beginning of it sounds like a U2 ripoff. I don't like that. That's all I got. Hopefully that's enough for you, Joe. I didn't give you a clear top five, but this is just all like on the spot, stream of consciousness stuff. I mean, hell, what? I'm at 82. Let's go through. Yeah, there's Maroon 5, This Love at 90, like Dalton said. Zach Brown Band, Chicken Fried. Can't stand that song. I realize I'm ticking off like millions of people who like country music.
The Southerners.
Even Gwen Stefani, Let Me Blow Your Mind, 94, too, way too low for that. That should be up there. Let's see, what's the Mr. Irrelevant? Yellow Card, can't stand Yellow Card. Oh, LMFAO, Shots. Hate that song. So annoying. And now I sound like the grouchy old man. So
every song you hated is a song that is mostly played at dance parties / weddings. So do you hate dance parties / weddings?
No. Weddings are fun, man. Dance parties.
John just walks around with his hands over his ears the entire time.
Erroneous. Erroneous on all counts. No. But, I don't know, maybe we'll have a dance party in Havertown.
Alscoop.com dance party. In the
Let's crash some weddings. Alscoop.
Wedding crasher gathering. My wife might have something to say about that. But next you guys question. Are single men. You can have fun with that.
Next question comes from @MattDeebs on Twitter. Other than the
weddings, I love it.
Other than the receivers, who else do you see as potential NFL picks in 2018?
All right, so
Sean Chandler.
Yeah, I mean, I think Chandler jumps out to you. Gosh, let's go.
I mean, if Mike Jones was legitimately getting any draft buzz going into this year, I mean, maybe. You know.
Yeah, I still want. I think you're right. I think like people latched onto that, like, oh, Todd McShay at one point said he could be a small school guy. I still want to see how Mike Jones does against like a step up in competition. Like, how would Mike Jones fare against like if he was coming back? How would Mike Jones look against Zay Jones from East Carolina, who I really, going back to draft talk for a second, I think Zay Jones could be just as productive a receiver as Mike Williams at the next level, but again, what do I know? But we'll see. I mean, Mike Jones, I think Chandler, because Chandler will be,
he'll be a senior.
He'll be a senior. I mean, if Armstead has, let's say Ruckel Armstead has a really dynamic year, is he an early, he'll be a junior, right? He'd be coming out a year early, I mean, possibly. And then I think, you know, I mean, going down the line here, I mean, who else could we be?
Leon is a senior, maybe Leon does get...
Leon would have to stay healthy, really have to have a solid year at left tackle. I mean, I think people will be intrigued by him because of his size and his strength, but he'd really have to put it together this year. Those are some of the names I think that would jump out at me.
Most ideal.
But then again, you know, the fun thing about this is we were doing this podcast a year ago, were we talking about Hassan Reddick as a first round pick? Absolutely not, but he just has had like a meteoric rise, so we'll see.
Last question comes from Xmas City Owl on the message boards. Who do you see switching positions to fill weaker / less deep areas?
I mean, before the spring, I probably would have said Jagger Gardner switching linebacker. That's something I've probably said for a while, but I mean, the way he's looked at running back, I think they're going to have to find time for him. They're going to have to find carries for him. And the way the linebackers have kind of played out, the linebackers seem to be deeper than I thought they would be. Even though they're young and inexperienced, they seem to be a deeper group than maybe we thought.
No, that's the very first. That's where my mind goes at first. Again, we talked about, you know, I mean, looking back to the recruiting class of a couple of years ago, I thought, okay, Gardner's coming in. Well, didn't Gardner,
Simmons and Armstead came in
the same class. So original thought a couple years was, okay, Jagger Gardner eventually is just going to be a linebacker, and it's going to be Armstead and Simmons sharing the carries. Well, T.J. Simmons just never got it here, and Armstead's been the feature back. I actually talked to Gardner on Saturday about the linebacker thing, and he kind of looked at me as if to say, like, it was never really like a realistic possibility for me. They haven't talked to me too much about linebacker. So, and again, as Matt said, a lot of experience, but a ton of athleticism and range with these linebackers. Like, Jeremiah Tokes look good. They seem pretty high on William Kwenku. I mean, Sean Bradley's look good. If Folks comes back, another question I asked Jeff Collins, I said, when Jared Folks comes back, does he kind of get inserted back into the middle? He goes, well, as you know, we take a global approach. So he just literally will not. You know, I get it. And I like Jeff Collins a lot. I just feel like I'm about to ask him, like, is your name really Jeff? Well, you know, I've got some name flexibility there. So maybe Jeff, maybe it's Tom tomorrow. Who knows? You know, they're very hesitant to say anything super specific, which, again, I get. But I think the linebackers there, at least in terms of depth, I don't think that they would now move somebody to linebacker because they'd say, oh, we need bodies there. So I don't know. I don't even really know. I think if you see, we know that Keith Kirkwood wouldn't be permanently moved to defensive end. I think if you see him get some snaps at defensive end, I don't think it's because of any concern that they have in terms of lack of depth there. Again, young, inexperienced, but some ability there with DeAndre Kelly, with Dana Levine, mm-hmm. like guys starting to maybe come into their own a little bit. I thought another guy who I neglected to mention earlier who I thought looked good on Saturday was Dan Archibald.
Mm-hmm.
Really physically sculpted dude who looks, I didn't need
like
to
Dave
say
Patton.
Dude there. He's a good looking dude. But he looked good playing the game. He looked like he had some explosiveness coming off the edge. So even there, I think that's going to be, I think, the huge theme this year. You're going to hear these coaches say a lot, we're a developmental program. Temple is suddenly going to become a very developmental program. They're going to talk about a lot of these guys who are developing, rightfully so. And I think Archibald, Kelly, Levine, those guys, I think they have some ability there. So I don't know. I don't really know that there's a position right now where they'd say, oh my gosh, we're so thin there that we need to move somebody over. Unless it's somebody who we're not anticipating now, who maybe like they're sitting around saying like, wow, this kid would make a really good offensive guard. Maybe something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree, but for the most part, I mean, I think if you're going to maybe make some position changes, I don't think it's going to be like those permanent changes. I think
no.
It would be more so like, I mean, they've been practicing guys at different places. Like Tyre Wilson, I think, has been getting shots at fullback and offensive guard. And Steve Petrick, a tight end, has split out to offensive tackle.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been doing different things with different guys. And Freddie Booth Lloyd, I think, has moved over to the offensive line a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing different things, and that goes back to the position flexibility thing. But ultimately, I think those guys will probably stay put. Maybe you'll see sprinkles here and there of, you know, maybe Sean Bradley gets a carry at running back like he did in the spring game.
Yeah.
Who knows? But, like, I don't think it's going to be suddenly Sean Bradley becoming a full-time running back or Freddie Booth Lloyd becoming a full-time offensive guard. I don't think that's what I'd look for. I'd just look for more, you know, guys sprinkled in here and there on playing both sides of the ball.
And one last thing, I hope it didn't come across. I mean, even though I think it'll be like a buzz thing, I don't necessarily really mean it in a snarky way. I do think that Temple, I really think has always been a developmental program. We can't say that they're going out and getting a bunch of five-star guys like Alabama does, but having said that, I do think that's what, if you're a fan of this program or you go to school at Temple, you are now seeing the fruits of a program that now has won a conference championship, and now the redshirt freshmen that most people maybe haven't heard of or forgotten about now are literally developing, like Sean Bradley. You know, some of the other, you know, like guys like Jeremiah Toki, guys that have developed a little bit of a slower pace who are starting to come around and starting to be developed, you know. A guy like Kareem Ali, who was a more notable four-star recruit, but those guys are starting to be developed. So you could be depending upon a lot of redshirt freshmen this year. Like a guy like Dan Archibald could be, you know, if he goes out and gets you four or five sacks, I'm not saying he's definitely going to, then they are following this progression. So it did make sense for them to redshirt guys. Whereas in 2006, 7, 8, 9, it was like, you're good, you're even a halfway decent freshman, you got to get out there and play right away. Now they can afford to redshirt guys. So it will be interesting to see how that all works out, because I think it does play back into what we're talking about, where they can look at these positions and you can say linebacker's wide open, but we at least feel like we have talent and depth there, even if it's untested depth. Defensive end, young in some ways behind Jacob Martin, but we've got some young depth there. So I just want to make the point that when I do think it's going to be a buzz phrase, like we're a developmental program, but I don't think that the coaches are necessarily lying when they say that.
That's going to do it for us this week. Thanks for the questions on the message boards, and as always, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.